Hello and welcome to episode 21 of University Registrars Talking About Stuff. I'm delighted to be talking to Richard Calvert, Deputy Vice-Chancellor Strategy and Operations at Sheffield Hallam University, and we enjoy an interesting chat about the current challenges but also the wider issues facing the sector too. Richard talks us through his long and varied civil service career, which included major stints at DFID working with some notable secretaries of state and some major work on organisational effectiveness in the civil service and in other agencies as well, before he ended up at Sheffield Hallam 4 years ago. We learn about some of the big changes he's made since he arrived at Hallam, with a real focus on breaking down silos but also trying to address the unhelpful academic professional services divide, trying to avoid the us and them. Looking at wider university strategy, Richard notes that it's important to align both professional and academic strategy inputs and to eliminate much of the baggage which people often bring to institution-wide discussions. The professional service changes Richard made in previous years really helped prepare the ground for an effective COVID response. And although each week brings its fresh challenges, he feels that academic and professional services staff have responded extraordinarily well, although there is still a long way to go. We also talk about how the crisis management mode we're all in at the moment makes it really difficult to think longer term, which is why it's important to continue to focus on strategy development and to seek to encourage colleagues to think ahead and remain optimistic for our institutions. In terms of the long-term prospects for the sector, Richard's also optimistic, but stresses that it is vital that universities demonstrate their real value at local level and also show the value of higher education to the country as a whole. It's a really interesting and stimulating discussion, and I hope you enjoy it. Welcome everyone to another edition of University Registrars Talking About Stuff, and this week it's my real pleasure to introduce Richard Calvert. Richard is Deputy Vice-Chancellor Strategy and Operations at Sheffield Hallam University, where he's been for a wee while now. So Richard, welcome.
Thank you Paul.
And it's great to be talking to you, and you've been at Hallam for a while now. I mean, perhaps you could talk us through, because you've followed a rather different career trajectory before joining the university. Perhaps you could tell us how you ended up at Hallam.
Yeah, I mean, it's just coming up to 4 years at Hallam now. So, wow. You know, it's definitely feeling like home, but it you're right. HE has not been my home for most of my career. I started off way back in the 1980s, joining the civil service, went in as on the civil service graduate route, I spent most of my career working in international development and the Foreign Office. So I started off in what in those days was the old Overseas Development Administration, what became Department for International Development, and I worked there, started off in, in the kind of classic, policy jobs, private office jobs, worked with Chris Patten and Claire Short when they were ministers in the late 80s, and then Claire Short in 97 through to about 2000. Spent 4 years in Brussels in the UK representation to the EU.
Very topical.
Yeah, so probably first 15 years or so of my career was pretty classic civil service policy generalist kind of role. And then I guess around about 2000, the civil service was just at that stage going through that kind of professionalization stage of, you know, generalists still okay, but not quite as perfect as they used to be, and we're much more focused on professional practice and so on. And I got really interested in the whole kind of issue around organizational effectiveness and organizational performance, and that really shaped probably what was the next 15 years or so of my career. So I did a finance qualification around that time. I kind of increasingly shifted into finance director, chief operating officer kind of roles. And I spent a little bit of time around then in local government in Hertfordshire. I spent a couple of years chief operating officer kind of role in the Food Standards Agency. And then I went back to differed again in 2009-10, and spent 6 years there, kind of effectively in the chief operating officer role, but at a really, you know, really fascinating time for DFID. Yeah. When, for those who follow their international development, we were working up to delivering the kind of the totemic 0.7% of aid, of GNI as aid commitment. So that was kind of a really big deal throughout the coalition government. And you know, and a really odd thing to be doing in lots of ways for lots of people, because we were spending significantly more money on international development when most of the government was going through austerity. So, you know, really interesting time. But I guess partly because of that, you know, it was such a, it sort of in many ways was a culmination of a lot of what I'd done for the last 25, 30 years, that I kind of hit a bit of a, what do I do next in 2014, 2015? And I had an opportunity to go and work in DfE, for which I did as kind of Director General for Finance and Corporate there, which I did for a little while. But I guess I'd already started thinking about potentially moving out and doing something different. And I had looked at a couple of universities, and I'd sort of just slightly dipped my toe in the water of a couple of COO registrar type jobs in universities, and thought that might be interesting. And then, I guess one way and another, one thing led to another. The opportunity at Hallam came up. My wife at the time had actually been offered a job up in Leeds, which, because we were living down in London, and she was really interested in that. And then the Hallam job came up, and, you know, the bits sort of fell into place.
Yeah.
And, here I am.
So a fantastic history then. So in terms of your the role that you're doing now, I mean, how broad is it?
Well, it's broadened as I came into the role. So it started off, I think, being I arrived pretty soon after Chris Husbands came as VC, and you know, as everyone knows, you know, change of VC is often a change of bit of a change of leadership and structure and so on, and we did at that time move from a, you know, a, I guess a more traditional university secretary as the senior administrator role to more of a model of a chief operating officer, chief finance officer, and I came into the chief operating officer role.
Yeah,
I think though inheriting probably the services that worked in the old, if you like, in the old structure. So there was, I spent a lot of the first 12, 18 months here, I guess, reorganizing professional services and bringing it together. We've very much gone for an integrated approach to professional services, rather than a sort of college faculty based model combined with central services. And for me, one of the big things about, you know, over the last 15 years about doing a chief operating officer kind of role has been, you know, for me, there is real value in a sense of teamwork and collaboration across professional services. So I've always had a real dislike of silo based working. I think it doesn't work for users. I think it's less motivating to be part of. So I've always had a real focus on trying to get a sense of team working and collaboration. So that was a big focus. But I guess partly because my background is a bit weird, and it's this kind of mix of policy and strategy and operations as well. One of the things I was really keen on when I came in was not just kind of getting completely locked into the operational space and trying to keep a foot in the more strategy, external engagement, you know, the broader agenda of the university, and I probably slightly naively when I came in, I was probably a bit naive about the whole kind of, you know, the sort of sector culture around what do academics do and what do professional service staff do. So I sort of blundered my way through that a bit and just you know, does it have to be quite as rigid as that? And I don't think it does myself. But so I've sort of kept a role which has combined the two. And my job at the moment, although it is, you know, kind of the core leadership managerial responsibilities around professional services, I have kept hold of a broader reach across the university. So I've led a lot of the civic and external engagement work. So we, you know, one of the things been interesting in the last 6-9 months or so has been trying to get the Civic University Network off the ground. Yes. So, you know, that was part of my work. I think the strategy work, the strategy bit of the role is quite explicitly intended not just to be about operational and organizational strategy, but about organizational strategy, including academically, what are we trying to achieve as well? And I'm not saying that's a, you know, that's an exclusive responsibility, but I do think for universities, there is real value in trying to get the skills and perspectives that professional service staff bring and the skills and perspectives that academic staff bring and really have them, you know, working together. Not always easy. I'm not saying we always do it remotely perfectly at Hallam. We don't. But yeah, for me, it's something I guess I'm going to, yeah. You know, I think it's worth working hard at.
That is really interesting because the, I mean, you know, the kind of change in structure of professional services and that kind of more integrated model, I think is really interesting. Then the idea of having a you know, an even more integrated approach, is which is what I think you're suggesting across you know, the academic and the professional as well, is something that, you know, has been challenging in lots of universities since the dawn of time. And you know, in many cases academic and professional services do work very well together, but you know, it sometimes you still find yourself in an us and them scenario, which is terribly unhelpful, especially as everyone's aiming for the same thing.
Yeah, no, I think so. And I think when it works well, you know, people really, you know, everyone benefits from it. And I think, you know, I mean, it's one of the interesting things about having worked, I guess, in some different contexts, you know, in a lot of organizations, if you were putting together your strategy or thinking about key policy questions, you'd be very deliberately trying to put together a team that has a real broad range of perspectives. You'd see that as valuable, yeah, in you know, in trying to get the right answer. And I think we miss those opportunities too often in universities. We too often think, you know, it's X's job to do X and it's Y's job to do Y. And actually, you know, like most big complex organizations, there's very little about what we do that is, you know, that isn't going to benefit from some wider perspectives. And so, yeah, it's just about breaking down, you know, there's so much baggage, isn't there? You know, yeah. Let's be honest about it. There's so much baggage, which I think on all sides people bring in. And I think we just have to give people the confidence that, you know, inviting others into a discussion or taking other perspectives is not a sign of failure. It's actually a sign of strength.
Yeah, no, I think that is absolutely correct, Richard. You're absolutely right there. What, just moving us on a little bit then, I'm thinking of whether or the extent to which, you know, those changes that you spearheaded within professional services in particular, but across the wider university, how that potentially supported your response, you know, to the coronavirus, to lockdown at the start of towards the end of March. I mean, did you feel that you were in a better place to respond to that because of the changes that you've made, or were you up a creek the same as everyone else?
It absolutely helped us, and I think actually one of the things that even some of those who weren't necessarily enthusiastic about the changes we made 2 or 3 years ago, you know, one of the things I'm most pleased about is the number of those people have come along in the last 6 months and said, actually, you know, if we hadn't done that, we'd have found this really hard. And I think that's because so much of what we were doing was about getting you know, one way of doing things increasingly across the university, joining up teams, you know, having clear lines of authority and accountability, single points of decision making on some of our key processes. And I think that would have been really, really stretched in the environment we've been in, where you need to move at pace, but you also need to work remotely. So yeah, I think it definitely did help on the operational side. You know, it hasn't meant that it hasn't been hard, because it's been, you know, it's been hard, like it has for everyone. But I think on the plus side, we had we had some really strong relationships built, and we did have roles. It's really interesting, actually. One, also, some of the roles we created through that change, which was only maybe 18 months, 2 years ago, the roles actually have really come into their own in the last six, nine right. months. And that's one of the interesting, you know, I remember there's two or three people in particular who, you know, the kind of the theory of creating the role was right, and they were kind of working okay. But actually, they've really kind of become critical roles in the organization. So we brought together a whole range of functions around student and academic services into a, you know, a single team, both across colleges, central teams, and multiple, what was previously multiple specialist areas, and gave a kind of single point of authority and decision making. And that's been absolutely, you know, absolute you know, critical role for us in the last 6 months, just having someone who can quickly say, yeah, we can do this, we're not going to do this, we can do this, but we can do it this way. And you know, in the old model, you'd have had, yeah, well, this is our advice, and then each college will work out their slightly different way of doing it. And you know, you know that you know that story.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
well, no, that I mean, but that's also really encouraging, because it does actually show you that the changes that you've made, actually, when it, you know, when it push comes to shove, when you're in a difficult situation, actually, it works. And, you know, and it can then embed it and show the value of it to others as well, which is really encouraging. But if you move forward a bit then, so that was good in terms of the response. I mean, how's your institution approached, you know, the kind of start of session? How did you to get people lined up and ready to, you know, to reopen? Because, you know, the summer was a really difficult time for lots of people. And there were some saying, of course, that we shouldn't reopen at all. And obviously, you know, people are looking back now to decisions that were made and thinking, oh, well, did we do the right thing? What's your take on that?
I mean, probably like everyone, we spent a lot of time in, you know, late July, August, September, you know, focused on gearing up for the start of term. In terms of the basic academic delivery model, we agreed in probably late July, early August, we agreed a core set of academic delivery principles for the autumn, which was, you know, broadly number of hours we wanted face-to-face, number of hours synchronous, asynchronous, kind of core principles. So we agreed a set of core principles, which, you know, probably again, like most people, it was a blended model.
Yeah.
But we did really want to maintain a, you know, core element of face-to-face for everyone, and a minimum degree of structure in the timetable. So we went in, and then we, you know, worked with people through the summer, tried to get everyone prepared for that, and you know, felt we were reasonably well prepared. Did a lot on the core service side, you know, a lot of preparations for a very different welcome week. And of course, you know, and then we're 3-4 weeks into it, and I mean, the experience, inevitably, you know, you plans hit real life, and not everything works out the way you wanted it to. I mean, what's gone well, what's been tough? I mean, welcome week was really weird to start with, you know. I mean, we knew it was going to be a virtual welcome week, but I mean, it was, you know, it was hard to get a real sense of momentum around welcome week. And you know, we're pleased in lots of ways to get into the first week of teaching. In fact, teaching mostly has stuck with the principles that we wanted to. But of course, you know, like a number of universities, you know, you and we and lots of others have had the same pattern. We also immediately went into the uptick in infection rates across the country, uptick in a number of university cities. And although we didn't end up with some of the early stories we saw in a few places around, you know, big halls of residence in lockdown, we had a pretty steep uptick in cases through week one and into week two. That's come down you know, we're on a downward trend now. You know, it's still there. Can't be complacent in any case, but you know, so we hit that, and of course, you know, that starts to have an impact. You know, that starts to have an impact on student attendance on campus, on self isolation. Yeah. It divert, you know, staff start to get nervous. We've had the whole UCU dispute running along in the background. We've had the SAGE advice last week. Thanks very much. You know, and all of that. So look, it feels at the moment like we're back. I guess, you know, we started off in March full incident management mode. We then sort of stabilised a little bit, and now we're very much back in, you know, we're back in the core incident management way of working. And, you know, and yeah, I mean, each week is, let's say, probably like all of us, each week is bringing its fresh challenges.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right there. I mean, what I've been... I've been hugely impressed with the way our university community has responded to, you know, the ever changing challenges that we've been faced with. And, you know, the scale of the cases that we faced and the response required in order to look after students who were isolating, I think was, you know, was something that we hadn't envisaged in quite that way. Although we knew we had the ingredients in place to respond to it, but I think the rapidity and the scale, you know, was quicker and faster than we were expecting. But nevertheless, colleagues have responded amazingly to that. I've also been hugely impressed, I have to say, with the way academic colleagues have responded to the, you know, the challenges of adapting their teaching and learning support to, you know, first of all, an online environment, then to this kind of blended environment. I think it's placed enormous demands on them, both in terms of learning design, but also assessment design. And, you know, I think that, you know, the lengths people have gone to support and provide for their students and to get them, you know, through creatively their programs has been terrific.
Yeah,
but we're still at the beginning, and that's the really tough thing. It seems to me there's a hell of a long way to go yet.
There is, and I think, I mean, I absolutely endorse what you've said about the way staff have responded to this. You know, I think you know, if you'd ask people how will universities respond to a crisis of this scale before, you'd have had some people who were feeling a little bit nervous about the answer, but actually staff have been brilliant, and I think our experience, you know, I would describe our experience as very similar to yours. When I worked in government, I worked on quite a lot of crisis management, international development, and, you know, natural disasters and all sorts of things. And I think, you know, the speed and quality of response of a lot of our staff over the last 6 months has been absolutely right up there with the best that I've seen in my career. And and similarly for academic colleagues, you know, the commitment to doing a great job and doing the right thing by students is great. But I think you're right as well. You know, I mean, we've seen, I mean, it's hard to take yourself back, isn't it, to the summer now. It almost feels like we've been in this second wave for a long time, but it's not that many weeks ago. You know, we were thinking about the world and the autumn a little bit differently, and there was a second wave somewhere off potentially in the winter. And and I think it has hit people pretty hard. You know, I think you know, quite a lot of people have found silver linings in the last 6 months in, you know, in more time at home, more time in the garden, you know, chance to live a slightly different kind of life in terms of avoiding the commute and so on. But looking into the, you know, looking at 6 months of shorter days, colder weather, it's not quite the same as sort of finishing work and still having 4 hours of daylight.
Yeah. Absolutely right. And also, I mean, as you said, moving from, you know, back into the kind of crisis management mode, I mean, and we'll come on to this now, I think. I mean, looking ahead, I mean, it's just very, very difficult to see beyond the end of the day, the end of the week, let alone past Christmas, right? But it does seem to me that in order to have real hope about, you know, our institutions, we have to focus on the medium and longer term. And, you know, because universities are are about the longer term. And yes, you know, you, as we will have colleagues who are, you know, working on research, which is highly relevant to, you know, the nation coming out of the virus, but also, you know, the, you know, issues around vaccines as well. So, but we've got to look at that kind of long-term issue. But it's incredibly difficult when you are focused on the current crisis right in your face right now, and everyone's knackered. So, I mean, have you managed to get colleagues thinking beyond the next few weeks and months into the longer term yet?
We've been trying really hard not to lose that. So in, you know, relatively early on in the spring, we did say, look, you know, we've got to learn from this as we go along, and we've got to start thinking about opportunities for the future. So we have had a future strategy process, which we set up back in April, May time, and you know, we have maintained that, and we've taken a set of proposals to our governors next week, actually, which is a culmination of a lot of that work, and right. So we have tried to do that. I mean, it's last two or three weeks, it's been tough to keep the focus on that, but we've been trying really hard to do it. And I think some of that is about that's about, you know, the good old sort of theory of when you're forced into change, don't just wait to go back to the old way of doing things. And so some of it's about the if you like, the sort of positives that have come out of changed ways of working. And I think probably a lot of colleagues will have similar stories around streamlining governance, around, you know, quicker decision making, fewer meetings with too many people in them, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. So we're trying to capture some of that around, you know, not going back to the old ways in sort of governance and decision making. I think, you know, there's a really interesting theme emerging around how attractive for staff and students it could be to do a long-term shift in how we think about use of the campus, and, you know, breaking out of the default model being staff come and work on the campus and then they go home, you know, and kind of really trying to embed a much more flexible approach to the campus for students and staff, so that, you know, we break away from the idea of you know, owned spaces, fixed desks, regular attendance, and so you know, really interesting thing about that, I think, which feels like it could work very well. But we're also, I think, you know, let's be honest, we've got financial and other challenges, let alone, you know, whatever agenda is emerging from the government around HE and FE. Can we envisage where we want to be in 3-4 years time, 5 years time? We know change doesn't necessarily happen quickly. You know, if you want to shift your offer, shift your core priorities, it does take time. We are really trying hard to keep that strategy thinking going alongside, so that as we do start to emerge, we're kind of there rather than thinking, whew, you know, what do we do now?
And which I think is absolutely laudable. I just think it's difficult to get people thinking that way in a time of crisis. But that's really impressive. One final thought then, Richard, which kind of goes beyond you and Hallam. What's your thinking about the longer term prognosis for our sector? I mean, this is a time of extraordinary challenge. As you rightly say, there are financial issues as well. We've got still tremendous uncertainty about our international recruitment now and in the future. What do you think the future holds for the sector in terms of, you know, mergers or, you know, universities going out of business? How do you think it'll play out?
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, I'm and always have been very optimistic about the sector. You know, I think we've still got something that is hugely valuable and recognised as such in the UK and more widely. And also, crucially, you know, all the evidence from young people is still that they want to go to university. So, you know, I think we should be able to look at the future really positively. But I think we have, Now we've lost some of the sheen, if you like, that was around the sector in the past over the last few years, and I think that's partly because we've slightly lost our grip on what is the case for universities, and you know, are universities obviously a good thing. I think at local level, and I'm going to come back to my civic theme because I do think this is really important, particularly in cities like Nottingham and Sheffield. I do think demonstrating the value of universities at a local level over the next few years is an opportunity that we just must not miss, because I think we are going to be critical to the not only to the economic progress of these areas, but actually more broadly, more socially. I think demonstrating our value at local level is really important. But actually, I think there is a real opportunity for the sector if it could really come together on this to demonstrate what is the value of UK HE to the country and more broadly. And I think, you know, I deliberately talk about the sector coming together around that narrative, because we don't always, and we haven't always, and we still, you know, we still, I think we still fall too often into that old trap of which bit of the sector am I in?
Yeah.
And, you know, we are a diverse sector. We should be the strength in that diversity. But I think we've got to be a bit less hung up on thinking what bit of the sector are we in first, and thinking what is our collective interest? I think there's plenty of space within that for us to be, be where we want to be. But I think we've got to really kind of grasp the nettle of how critical is HE to the UK over the next 4 or 5 years and beyond. And I think it's absolutely critical. But we've got to seize the initiative and tell that story better locally and nationally.
Absolutely agree with all of that. No, thank you very much indeed for that, Richard. And thank you for a really stimulating discussion and conversation about all matters university, Hallam, pandemic, and the future of higher education in the UK. So thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. Absolute pleasure. Thanks, Paul.
That's all then from University Registrars Talking About Stuff this time. There'll be plenty more along in due course. And if you can't wait, then please do check out the Registrarism blog on wonky.com, where you'll find lots of higher education comment and fun and games. Until next time.